All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Only 3 minutes late. But if you listen to this podcast, you couldn't be bothered. What time it is we're coming on. First of all, happy International Workers' Day. Such a thing does exist, because we all pretty much work, don't we? Holidays, paid holidays, in some places, paid sick leave in some places, overinflation, pay rise in some places, safety at work in some places. So I'd say 99% of the world population does work. So happy International Workers' Day. And we put a tweet out, you don't have to, it's not a woke comment or a left comment. Everyone works, and everyone wants to be paid well, have decent terms and conditions, and be being safe. Yes. We're going to talk about on John's show a wonderful policy called Rwanda. That's a good for a laugh, that is. And of course, culture wars back again. John, take it away.
Honey, it would go away. Well, first of all, I'm not going to stop for breath tonight, because we've got a hell of a lot to do. So, yes, I say to Dave, I back up Dave's happy International Workers' Day. Let's see what we've got here. Labour Party UK. Labour set to unveil weakened package of workers' rights. As Marcus Barnett on Twitter says, happy May Day from Keir Starmer. While we're on the subject, I don't like reading stuff off Twitter, but I do think this is important. There is another trade unionist named Kate Flood, who shout out to her. She just read a couple of tweets here I think are well worth reading. This May Day, look at the comrades around you and notice the invisible work. Make that division of labour equitable. Reproductive labour, domestic labour, emotional labour, hours of phone banking, adapting spreadsheets, printing flyers, making sure everyone has water, and so on. Class struggle isn't just about the part that you see. Most of it you won't see. It's not shouting into a megaphone or leading a chant on a picket. Hours and hours of work, often monotonous, often thankless, often tiring, often unseen, that makes the big actions possible. Share it out. Completely agree with you, Kate. Solidarity, and hope you feel good soon. Okay, so this week is going to be all about fighting back against, fighting back in a dying country and the viciousness and indecency of those in power that they turn out towards those of us who refuse to accept their shit. So to begin with, yes, standing up to the Rwanda bill, advice. On Monday last week, the Rwanda bill was finally voted for, claims the first flight will take off in 10 to 12 weeks, deporting refugees to offshore detention in Rwanda. With this state of affairs, we have also seen the resistance kick into gear. Protests against the bill and its enactment, blocking raids on asylum seekers, taking them from their homes, including refusing to allow the vans to drive away. Yes, if you block the van and refuse to allow it to move, they have to let the occupants inside out of it, because that's the only way that they can do that. If you get arrested doing that, other people need to come and block the vans too. We all need to do a little bit of that, including me. Plus, some important information on here is on how to defend yourself is included, and we will read it all out here. Now, I am well aware that those most affected by this may not be listening to the show, but those of you who are listening can pass this information on, specifically numbers for legal advice and the like. If you are an asylum seeker who came to the UK after the 1st of January 2022 and you are still waiting for a decision, you may be at risk of deportation to Rwanda. Before the flights get set up, it is important to get legal advice. If you are detained, do not sign anything. I'm going to say that again. If you are detained, do not sign anything. All paperwork should be read by a legal representative, especially concerning something this important. You can obtain this from one of the following numbers. Now, I'm going to read out the numbers, and I'm going to put this all of this stuff in the links for the show. Wherever you happen to hear this show, download it, listen to it again, we should be able to put that in there. I'll put it on the Twitter page when we put the show up later on, et cetera, et cetera. I'll put it up a couple of times. Anyways, let's begin. Detention Action, which is 0800. For those of you that don't know, that's a free number. 0800 587 2096. BID, and they are on 0207 456 9750. and they are around Mondays to Thursdays from 10 a.m. till 12 p.m. Care for Calais. Now, there's two different numbers here. The Care for Calais detention is another 0800 number, 0800-009-6268. Their specific Rwanda line is 07519-773-268. We then have, in no particular order, GDWG, which is 0800-389-4367. SDS is 07438-407570. And JCWI, which is another one that's open Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 10 till 1, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 0800-160-1004. As I said, those links will be included everywhere that we can put them. If you are told that you are going to be deported to Rwanda, you can fight this. You can get in contact with Wilson Solicitors, LLP, on 0208-808-5735. I'll say that again because I messed that up a little bit. I apologise. Wilson Solicitors, LLP, 0208-808-7535. You can also get them on, all one word, Rwanda Referrals, R-E-F-E-R-R-A-L-S, at wilsonllp.co.uk. There is also Duncan Lewis Solicitors on 033-37-720-409. As obviously, if you can put any of that kind of information through to the people that need it, or if you're listening yourself, then please pick this up. If you are offered the opportunity to go to Rwanda voluntarily or in exchange for money, you can say no to this. Again, you can say no to going there voluntarily. We should probably put that in air quotes. Again, don't sign anything without legal advice. So get legal advice, call any of those numbers that you need to if they're of any use to you. Detention Action and Care for Calais, I would personally recommend. I think they're very good. Wilson Solicitors, Duncan Lewis Solicitors, it's all there for you to take. Stand up, fight back. Do not take this lying down in any way, just because these people are being cruel and vicious and spiteful to you because they have nothing better to offer the public. Then it doesn't mean you have to be one of their willful victims. So, speaking of which, last week we touched on the issue of culture wars not being a vote winner. I didn't have time to go into it in detail. I wanted to flag this up about where I found it, et cetera, et cetera. So, hopefully you can, you don't mind us going back over this because I think it's worth doing. The Guardian reports on the findings of a research project done recently by More in Common, which was commissioned by 38 Degrees. And this research finds that culture war tactics are not a vote winner for swing voters. Many of the participants felt that Tory messages on campaign ads like "the woke mob is taking over" were desperate attempts to distract from their record in government. Oh, do you think? In fact, this term led in the poll to a 10% point decrease in Tory voters saying they were likely to back Rishi Sunak. What was more popular were policies or suggestions at best relating to improving local issues like high streets and job opportunities in the local area. More specifically, issues found to be far more popular included create jobs in our area, tackle antisocial behaviour, and save the high street. To give you a few, three in particular examples. Some specifics that showed up in the answers included rejection of what one participant called playing to the crowd on anti-trans issues and the overall process of clearly using distraction tactics. People not normally inclined to Labour were more interested when shown a campaign message based on protecting public services, which means they went up by 6 points upon promising to protect the NHS. If only they were telling the truth. But nevertheless, it's clearly a vote winner. Maybe you should do it then, Keir. That might give you an idea. Stop playing to the crowd of people who fund your disgusting political party. Now, a bit more about the research itself. This is a quote from the article. As part of the research for constituency-focused election messages, Labour and Tory culture war campaigns, and neutral political messages from each party, were shown in three focus groups, in Wokingham and Blythe in February and Calder Valley in April, and in a survey involving 2,000 voters overall. Just thought that was fair for all of you folks to know that. For Labour, its base supporters responded well to a campaign message saying, "We need to fight back against the racist government." But the party opened itself up to a 4 percentage point increase in voters who are unlikely to back Starmer by doing that. The researchers highlighted that for Labour to win a workable majority, it needs a broad coalition of voters spread efficiently in seats across the country rather than amassing votes among its base concentrated in a small number of constituencies. Even Lee Anderson did not come out well from all of this. While many Tories believe he speaks for the ordinary working people, which shows you just how much contempt they have for the rest of us, it seems we think otherwise. But only 17% of the public, this is a quote from the article, quote, but only 17% of the public said that Anderson speaks for people like them, the survey noted. Among the Red Wall or loyal national voters who are very patriotic, only 22% said he speaks for people like them, end of quote. That is quite a low number if you imagine the vote he's actually playing for. The research noted that knowledge of the culture wars was highest among the progressive activists who took part in online debates and were highly politically engaged. Yes, in other words, those of us who spend far too much time online are far more susceptible to this dog crap than anyone in the real world. I'll be the first to admit it. I'm really put my hand up to that. Among other voter segments, only 1 in 5 people could actually explain what a culture war is. Yeah. This comes in a week when the government tries yet again, or has tried, to surge ahead with their utterly inhumane deportation of asylum seekers to Rwanda as part of a government bill, with a vote in Parliament Monday before last that went their way, sadly. This is a process that is disgusting, costly, and makes no sense. It is only engaged in to please the far right, who are once again a threat to the mainstream of the Conservative Party. They was it ever thus, really, but they really are. Basically, they're going to constitute the mainstream of the Conservative Party going forward as they get kicked out of power at the next election. The far right will take over. So then after Keir Starmer and his just gaggle of hopeless middle-class managerial fucking scumbags do absolutely nothing for 5 years, first we'll lose the NHS. And then in one period's time, I seriously doubt Starmer's got more than one election in him because he's deeply unpopular. The Conservatives will come back in with a severe far-right agenda that's far worse than anything we've even seen now. They have moved further to the right, as they have in the past, just as a Conservative now, when they are losing support and they need another distraction. This is a crew on their last stumps, never mind legs, and they will go out like they came in 13 years ago, attacking the most vulnerable with zero care for the consequences on their lives, even if they end. We saw it with austerity. We're now going to see it with the homeless, which is a story we'll get to in a little while. And we're now going to see it with asylum seekers. Rwanda is not a safe country. It is an authoritarian state that has documented human rights violations to their name, not least involving asylum seekers. And they try to shut down anyone, including international journalists, who bring attention to this. But we already know this. We have entered a state of cruel and spiteful one-upmanship from people who, even when they have power, still want to destroy anything that disagrees with them. Conservatism has ruined the world for at least 40 years of political and economic power, but they will always have a chip on their shoulder about culture. Our most recent iteration is being anti-woke. This is the latest variation that runs from being anti-PC, the leftover from the 90s crap, to full-on white supremacy within the mainstream. Everyone from most extreme racists in public to washed-up comedians now whines about woke culture somehow being responsible for their present state of affairs, most of which is dismal. Woke, like PC before it, holds no real power. It is just a case of being polite and decent to people, hated by those unable to face that life has moved on, or because the greatest political achievements that they hope for in life is to tell racist jokes without feeling guilty or having to look over their shoulder while doing it. Woke holds no power, so it does not really exist in the people accused of doing it. Woke is an excuse for failure. Woke is something to blame when time has moved on and no one will tolerate your bullshit or even your unfunny jokes anymore. The painful truth is that we have failed to take real control of our lives. Working for a living has never been fun, but in today's failed realm of neoliberal desperation, it defines our lives more than ever. As we work for less, have to pay out increasing amounts for a roof over our head or food in our bellies. Nothing means anything beyond productivity. This is all we are good for, and it is all we will ever be used for. In that world, what do you expect culture to amount to? It's just another excuse for producing capital in some way and nothing more. That's all they care about. It's all they ever will care about. When it comes to the prominent practitioners of anti-wokeism, they are very easy to take apart. They topple even quicker than a statue of some miserable old slave-owning bastard in falls into a lake into a river in Bristol. They are nothing more than an attention-seeking, self-serving, and usually talentless twat, demanding you give them your precious time and sometimes money. Sometimes they are the Nazi scum that we dealt with yesterday, and they are back with a new version of the same old prejudice. Always beware of false prophets, and anyone not taking on capitalism is not tackling the problem, ever. Everything else is nothing more than our old enemy, already mentioned this evening, distraction. Many try to excuse what they do with some notion of being subversive in some way or another. But what is subversive? Is it too much in our broken pretend society to ask for something that actually has some meaning to it? Real subversion is almost impossible to find, not least because it has been co-opted as part of the capital takeover of everything, or it has fallen victim to the very anti-working class politics we have lost out to because the middle class and higher are never going to take down a system that they have benefited from. You end up getting a cultural world full of middle class toffs, who are the only people who can afford to do it, and all you're ever going to get is, you're not going to get real folk music, you're going to get Mumford & Sons and Frank Turner. You're not actually going to get anything that is truly going to topple the system or attack anything, outside of a few flippant comments from some deeply ill-educated, despite all the money that they've spent on education, dimwits who make the shittest music known to man. And they will just carry on in that realm because that's all they know how to do and it's all they want to do. We see what happens in the political realm when somebody genuinely takes on the system. They are labelled as being evil in some way, anti-Semitic, despite a lifetime of standing up to all forms of racism. You even end up seeing videos of soldiers shooting at pictures of them pinned to a dartboard or whatever, and the army top brass make veiled threats about how they're going to overthrow it if that person ever gets into power. That's British democracy for you right there. I've never had a problem with being offensive. I have a problem with doing it for no reason, because this is a behaviour of school kids. It's not a way I think adults should conduct themselves. All we are doing is allowing overgrown teenagers to take our time and our attention in a period when it is in short supply and the stress of the world is far too much for us to bear most of the time. If you remember rightly, we spoke about last week, we spoke all about mental health and problems within the working world and how much damage it's doing to us. So I ask you this, my dear listeners, how often do you see a genuinely subversive viewpoint put across? Something that challenges power. I, for instance, want to see the death of patriotism. I know this viewpoint will annoy some people, deeply upset others, and get me death threats if the wrong people pick this up. For a lot of other people, they simply don't care. But I mean it sincerely because I think it is a cultural poison that makes the world a worse place. It causes conflict, and the only people who believe in it, and I use the word believe in very, very large air quotes because believing is very debatable when it comes to patriots. All of those people at best are the worst, most repulsive people in society. Racist, backward, always hiding their extremism up to and including fascist ideals of racial purity behind love of nation and the violent enforcers of that ideology, that is the police and the armed forces. They attack anyone who deviates from this viewpoint, anyone who dares to cross an imaginary boundary in a land we are constantly lectured to is free and that we should love without question. All of these characteristics were present in fascist Italy, Nazi Germany, and plenty of other human rights abusing societies before and since. It is also just pathetic. You do nothing for the people of this country, yet you claim you love it. You are always criticizing it, saying people are terrible and they do not belong here. Waving a flag is really the most low-energy, low-intellect activity that there can ever be. It involves absolutely no commitment to anything whatsoever. It involves no work, even though you're always moaning about how hard you work. Please, please, please ditch this grievance politics. You get nothing from it, and the worst people and corporations just monetize your discontent. No wonder you're so miserable, and no wonder we're all exhausted. Dave, over to you. What do you think of any of that shite?
My mic's gone funny, John. Just a couple of things.
Deep state.
Yeah. So,
because I'm slagging off patriotism.
Could you? So, where did you get that information on Rwanda, John?
I got. Oh, sorry. The which information? Do you mean the information for people if they're at risk of being deported? That stuff. Oh, okay. So it's been collated by some good folks and stuck on social media. So Care for Calais, I mean, I'm on their list, so I get stuff from them anyway. And the other one, so I've got to go back to my list, actually, because I can't remember all of them. Anyway, there's quite a few, yeah, but I'm on their list. Wilson Solicitors was pushed to me by somebody that I know in that area. Detention Action is the other one I get stuff from, and all the others are just, I just pick them up along the way.
Yeah, that's really interesting, John. Thank you for that. And it's information that's not readily available because we only get the main headlines from the outlets. I won't go into them because they're disgusting. But it's interesting because I was working in Tesco's. I was doing night shift in 1987 on election night. And it was mainly ethnic minorities, you know. Pretty much most of us on that shift were going to inherit wealth from our parents because we're not going to get wealth by that 1% that gets wealth. And it's interesting because I've been involved in politics since 1974. I was, strangely enough, addicted to it. And we got the results, say, about 4 a.m. properly. And I was certain, I said to the lads, I was sure Kinnock was going to do it, you know, because I'm a staunch Labour supporter. And one of the lads, who had no interest in politics whatsoever, said two words to me. He said, Middle England. And I was just, what's that about, Middle England? So I looked it up. We had no internet then. But I just used to scour the papers then, you know, when I used to finish my shift. And I noticed, you know, the papers spread out, you know, the news agents, which they used to be then. And you could see Middle England for what it was. And the trouble with the Labour Party, it doesn't matter who the leader is, it has failed. So I'm not sure if you know Neil Kinnock's history, John, and Michael Foot, Tony Benn. And Neil did an about turn in 1983, where he started off very left. And, you know, Michael Foot resigned after 1983. And Neil Kinnock did a real about turn, and some would say transformed the Labour Party, where his view was to attract or get votes from people who voted other parties to vote Labour, and how you would appeal to those people, which I suppose is Middle England, I suppose, because Middle England tends to vote political parties that are more safer with the economy. So I suppose that would be it. And in regards to that Rwanda thing, which is, I think, is linked, because it's linked to the fear factor of convincing Middle England, who are scared of people or feel that we should punish people escaping their war-torn country, and punish them. Because they've been convinced that 99% of those people come here for benefits and high-definition TVs and PlayStation 5s. But it's interesting, I'm in contact with the union that does the... and this is a revelation, actually, so get this, listeners. Now, they feel that those people coming from those boats... they've got French high-vis jackets on. I mean, they're safety French high-vis jackets. So although there is an element of these gangs putting people in dangerous, precarious situations, there's also an element, and this is not me, I'm just saying what I speak to the union of the Coast Guards, so to speak. And the people coming on to this country have French safety high-vis jackets. which obviously a gang is not going to be able to give out. And they're telling me that the government, Labour or Conservative, were well aware of this. It's just that this current government, being so right-wing and trying to appease Middle England, as I said, on another issue, are sending them to Rwanda, which obviously is not going to get through, or if it does get through, you've just named some legal aspects that it just can't happen. So I think this, it's a very political thing, you know. And I think in regards to politics, you know, as I said, what I would say to the left, or the far left, because it's, I think it's equally as bad, I've got to be honest, it's, they're as equally as bad as the far right. They may not share the same views, they just have a knee-jerk reaction. There's no and yes. Okay, if you say yes, what's your answer? And when you tell them, well, okay, yes, far right, let's kick out all Asians and blacks and whatever and make everyone feel safe and come out of Europe, how are we going to, you know, revolutionise or massage the UK economy being part of an island? And what I would say to the far left is, okay, you want the Labour Party out, and also how do you convince Middle England that a social party, how do you convince them that a social party, which you probably agree with everything from a socialist party, to be honest with you, your history says you do anyway, but how do you convince far left people that the Middle England to vote for your party, and here's our policies that are very confident in the economy? And these are the things I don't see many arguments. I don't see many arguments on either side on this famous Middle England. You can't convince them to, you can't convince them not to. And there is some information from politically that they're not giving out on immigration. I've always said, politics is probably the worst I've ever seen it at the moment. And I think the arguments for and against are the worst arguments as well. I've got to be honest with you. No one's actually said to me, vote for X because of X. You're not convincing me. And I've been around this, around the block many times. You know, I've seen splits in the Conservative Party, splits in the Labour Party, splits in the Liberal Democrats, and I can't see any. The arguments for and against today in the 21st century are the worst arguments for and against. I've got to be honest with you. Convince me. Tell me something. Tell me something that I can tell someone who's paying £1,500 a year on fuel, how we're going to fix it. Do we kick out all the brown people? Well, no, you're not giving me an answer there. Or it's the far left saying, well, let's kick out a working class party that has been here since 1921, and here's our option, and this is how we're going to fix it. We're going to do that, we're going to do that, we're going to do that, and we're going to do that with the economy. Because it's all, I don't think there's an argument, I haven't seen an argument. But, and this Rwanda thing, I mean, what's that about? I mean, you haven't given an argument, and you put brown people to put these policies in or stand by them. It's terrible. John?
Yes, well, that is the ultimate of that kind of particular form of worthless identity politics, is just get some ethnic minorities who side with conservatives, and they can bring in these hideous policies, because after all, you know, that's integration for you. Not really the kind of integration I believe in. Okay, there's a few things to pick up on there. Firstly, I've never really been convinced by the argument of the far left. I don't actually see a far left, really. I don't really know who they are. I mean, if you mean the kind of headbanger losers from SWP who try to protect a rapist leader and go on about 1917 all the time, they don't matter. Nobody cares about them. When you actually go to events, nobody really pays attention to them. They're, you know, it's nice to have the bodies there. And to be honest, there are some folks within that kind of realm who every time there are fascists trying to march through the streets, they show up and they fight back, which is more that can be said for their middle class variations in the likes of Hope Not Hate. So I'll give them that credit at least. Now, the other thing is that there is no left, no serious left ideology. By serious, I mean an actual real life left ideology that puts at the center of it the supremacy of one race over another in the way that the far right does and the right wing in general, I think, does. There have been problems with the left over the years for not, they've not always been good on things like Palestine, obviously. But then again, you can argue that that wasn't really a left wing government in the case of Mr. Oh, I've briefly forgotten his name, Mr. Wilson. But it will, you know, there's other aspects to see there. Left wing does not believe that a level of authoritarian might should take hold of the country and punish people for being what they are. That's a right wing ideology, always has been, always will be. And if anyone says, well, you know, there was authoritarianism in parts of the communist world when that was happening, yes, there was, but I don't believe those organizations, those countries, those unions were always were left wing, really. They forgot what their purpose for being there was. So that's the main difference. I actually get very irritated when that argument is put to me a lot of the time, but obviously in this environment it's important to try and answer it as best I can. It's as simple as that. I just don't actually think it's legitimate or realistic. Now, Middle England is another, always a good example, always something we have to think about, but really this is only one piece of research. But I honestly do believe that Middle England, whoever they are, wherever they are really not very interested in the cruelty and savagery that's being shown in this idea of deporting refugees. I think a lot more of Middle England are actually more humane and understanding. They might be simplistic. They might occasionally fall, well, more than occasionally fall for media narratives about dangerous Albanian gangs, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't believe that this sort of thing appeals to them. The other thing I think that really does appeal to them and appeals to all of us, unites all of us, is addressing the actual issues that we face in our day-to-day lives. You know, the unpopularity of immigration is something that's never particularly high when people feel like they've got money in their pocket and they feel like they can afford the food they need to get, when they feel like they're not going to be evicted every 10 minutes by some psychopathic bastard landlord. Those are the kind of issues that need addressing. When they're not walking through the streets and seeing a high street shutting down, seeing the country fail, none of these things are inevitable. You know, in other parts of the world, they have bustling high streets, even though everybody uses the internet these days. Not far from where we're sitting, you have Willesden and Harlesden, both of which areas I've talked about in the past, I think have really strong, powerful high streets full of independent shops that can be incredibly bustling on a Tuesday afternoon, never mind, you know, the weekend. So this is not an inevitability. Things can be different. Now, do people believe in this difference? Do people think that it's possible? And do people want this? Well, that's always going to be an argument to a greater or lesser extent. It depends on who you're talking to and how you measure these things. But one measurement I do have is the 2017 general election, where a Labour Party manifesto that promised all kinds of renewal and betterment of the country, nearly despite a barrage of media attacks, despite a party full of people who were actively trying to sabotage it, then claiming that it wasn't that popular, as if we would have ever known, we still ended up having a hung parliament and damn near got into power, only a few thousand votes away. They doubled down and went really for the jugular for 2019, and that's why it failed. Again, Jeremy Corbyn was never as unpopular as these people want you to believe that he was. What he really was is more popular than Tony Blair is these days, and that's something he never, ever wants anyone to know about. So that's something that you do to address. What would you want to get Middle England on side? You address the issues, and then you have to convince them that what you're saying is not only something you genuinely mean, but there's actually a possibility it's going to happen. That's the hardest part. That's always going to be that. But the point is, it's going to be even harder if you're not doing it at all and you're spending all your time with this anti-wokery bollocks and listening to these sad little wash-ups going on about how nobody likes their crappy comedy anymore, or they're being stopped from doing something when you can see right in front of you before your very eyes, they're doing that very thing. Absolutely ludicrous. So, you know, it's not something to dismiss along the lines of far, far left or whatever, because there isn't, I don't really believe there is a far left.
Well, I think when I say the far left, what I'm saying is that some of the anti-Semitism stuff that came out during Jeremy Corbyn's tenure. And it was great because they had young people online, and it was great because they knew, you know. And some of those little, you know, and I used to have to say, calm down, you can't say that, you know, they're going to pick up on that. Maybe it's my age, you know, you say, here's your argument. Because some of the stuff that they were saying was very, wasn't well thought through. And some of the narrative that we use, your narrative would be fine, my narrative would be fine on the arguments for Palestine. And it was a bit of education there, and it was great. It was a great time of change in this country. I don't think some of the stuff that came out there is going to go back in the box, by the way. I think it's released a renewed energy amongst young people. It's just how we harness that, you know. So when I say far left, at the moment, the far left are people going into the Virginia's teachers' strike, for example, going under the World Socialist or rank and file postal worker, and going in the workplace and telling them to reject the union. I follow them everywhere. So as much as I follow the far right, I follow the far left. And they're going in the workplace and telling people to reject their union. Now, if the Virginia teachers' strike did that, you know, and then when it failed, they went to Carolina and were doing that. So I tracked them down, and they're from Canada, and they've never had a dispute before, these people. So,
yeah.
And I must say to people, go into a when you hear about people taking strike action, you know, we've gone through it before. It's never easy, and the strategies you have to do, and you know, and you're trying to tell people that you're going to lose money, and your members actually 100% agree. We don't need people coming in the workplace and saying reject the union's offer with no strategy to say we'll reject it because they're just slagging off the union. I was very upset when they went in there. I checked them out, and their attempted influence in the Virginia teacher strike, which was great for teachers in the US, by the way, and John actually did some great work on that. And I was very upset with them. And then I tracked them down again, and they're from Canada, and they've never had a dispute in, you know, where they emanate from. And the rank and file postal workers union or organisation, you know, getting members to post stuff to reject the union's thing. You know, whose side are you on? Come up with an answer. I'm all ears. But don't be going in the workplace, because I tell you something, the employer's much bigger than them, and they'll use that and say, well, these lot are saying, well, you know, these lot are saying reject the union, and they'll love to create that narrative. So we've got to think, you know, we've got to come up with different strategies, you know, with this Middle England thing. Because you've got to remember that a lot of the Gen Xers and Gen Zs, so where I bought my house when house prices were low in the late 80s and 90s, you know, that wealth is house prices have gone up. I'm going to pass that wealth on to my kids, you know, so they bracket me as Middle England because house prices are quite high. So they'll bracket us as Middle England, you know. But I think you've always said that eventually the young people will not have wealth to pass down to their kids. That's if they have a climate, an environment, you know, that's bearable. Because they reckon by 20, you know, in 100 years, you know, we'll bloody be boiling, you know. The sea will stop soaking up the heat. You know, things like that, I could go on and on, which obviously the global climate deniers say it's all a con. Yeah, John, I don't know.
Well, firstly, the kind of people you're talking about, we've come across here, and we haven't really come across them that much. We've just seen them doing their silly shit online most of the time. I mean, they're very childish. They're pseudo-revolutionaries. You know, they're never happy. They're never satisfied. But really, they're far more kind of snobby, bookish types. They're not the kind of people who think it's okay to beat up a group of ethnic minorities, or even worse, walking down the street because they somehow have a threat to your country. So, like, again, like I say, the far right are arbiters of violence and destruction and race hatred, and that's the stuff they want to do. There's nothing on the left that compares to that. And if you say you've ever met someone who's, if you actually come to me with an argument stupid enough to say, well, I know someone who calls himself a socialist who's actually a racist, that person isn't a socialist, so please don't bother with that. I mean, yeah, those people are just, again, we kind of ignore them, don't we? I mean, there is that element, and there is elements within each individual union when it comes to the end of a dispute where people aren't happy and some people leave. And look, you know, speaking to our union, I'm not entirely happy with everything, but I'm also realistic about the way things are. Now, you know, I might argue that 75% of the members voted in favour of the deal, which nobody really likes, versus 97% who voted to carry on strike action. Okay, but how long was that going to go on for, and what was the ultimate? What do you see? This is one of the problems, right? Someone's pointed this out before us, and this is a good way of describing it. They say, I can't remember who it was I read said this. It was a long time ago, right? But if you're listening, whoever you were, thank you for the metaphor, the example here. People talk about 1968. Now, we've never been in our lifetime, probably, Dave, you and I have never seen anything like 1968, right? Because all we've ever done is fight to stop things getting worse. 1968 was a fight about making things better. It was a genuine fight for a progression. And all we've seen is regression ever since. And far too much of the time we're doing that. It's very depressing. I don't like spending my life just trying to fight to stop things from sinking even lower, right? That's not a good way to be. But that's where we are. And until we get better, and no, interesting in those, this is why I read out those tweets that I'd seen this evening, because that's exactly what they're about. A lot of this work is grinding, and it's not romantic and it's not fun, but it's necessary. And one of the reasons it's necessary is when the opportunity does come to genuinely change things, you need to be ready. And you get ready by experience, and you get ready by hard work and dedication to this. You know, you start in your workplace, for instance, you start by defending members against various things. And that can be a defense against something simple. It can be a disagreement between management and a union member, or it can be something that feeds in eventually to a much larger, much wider conflict that we have to fight for our lives to a degree, for our working lives. But you'll be ready to fight that fight if you start with the lowest stuff. You know, you don't get there without doing a lot of the paperwork and the mediation and the throwing agreements at managers who are too dumb to read them themselves. So it's that kind of level of hard work and dedication that's going to change things. It's not going to be one moment. It's not going to even be one conflict. There'll be one conflict that sort of marks the, how would you say, maybe the turning point, the tipping point. That can happen. And I think we've seen that with Palestine. I think we're seeing it right now. So it's just about that kind of, that's what I would say to people like this. Don't listen to someone who comes and says, firstly, if you don't like the leadership of a union, you don't like a union leader, I agree. The Teamsters had a hell of a time getting rid of Jimmy Hoffa Jr. because he was a disgrace to the union and to his father's name. But they've got Sean Fain now, who's fantastic. But that was Teamsters for a Better Union, I think they were called. That was like a group that organised. Yeah, to begin with, they were kind of a fringe group, and we all sneer at fringe groups, but they were organised, and they kept focus on what it was that they wanted. They didn't start waffling on about 1917 or trying to sell you a newspaper every time you were standing on a picket line losing money for a day. Okay, no one cares about that crap. So it's about proper organised dedication, making the argument, and eventually the argument comes to you. Now, that can happen in good ways, and it can happen in bad ways. I've got a real chill up my spine today, right? I was listening back to last night's Navarra Live, and a couple of days ago I was talking about the Rwanda bill with somebody, and I said to them, you know, honestly, I think not only is this uniquely cruel and spiteful from a group of people who really are just the lowest of all humanity, but I think we know there's a deep impracticality to it. And we're hearing about people, you know, popping up in Southern Ireland who had, you know, done a bunk or whatever. And we know that this country has a specialty in not being able to keep hold of where their asylum seekers actually go. I mean, they lost a couple of hundred children a couple of years ago, they all seemed to forget about, stuck them in hotels, didn't give a toss about them, and suddenly they all disappeared, which really should be in a kind of offence that, as a government minister, ends you up not just losing your job, but probably facing a trial for negligence and potential prison time, but not in this country, it seems. So we know that they do that. And I think everyone moans about that. But like with the criminal gangs who do this, there's an intention there. They could stop criminal gangs anytime they want to. If you're really bothered, but there's always like a representative of the criminal gang that smuggles people on the beach somewhere, getting people into boats or whatever, or getting people off the boats. You know, not so much off, but getting on the boats. Some kind of contact. You could put all your police forces on a beach, stick them in the sand dunes one night, and you know, if the French wanted to do this, for instance, they could come down and pick up the criminal gangs anytime they wanted to. It's not a question of they don't want to, you know, they don't care about other people leaving, but actually that's true too. They don't. They don't care if migrants want to go somewhere else, because everyone says that France is a safe country. It's not a safe country, okay? Migrants, refugees, etc., who end up in France often get their absolute shit beaten out of them by the police. They get, you know, they end up in these terrible camps with crappy tarpaulins over their head. That gets ripped down. They get thrown out. They get, you know, they are told to leave the country. That's how they do it. What you want in this, what the anti-refugee crew want in this country, is a police force that does that, not that deals with the problem and not actually arrests the people who are responsible for this terrible trade in humanity. They could do that anytime they wanted to. No, they don't want that. They just want more cruelty. That's the only thing they have, the only thing they live for. Make this person suffer because it makes me feel better about my miserable failed life. That's the only people they're appealing to. But the other thing I said to someone was, you know, it seems to me like, honestly, I think if they put this policy in place, they're going to say, well, it works because look at all these people who are running away when we tell them to attend refugee. Because, again, there's this thing where if you attend a meeting you're supposed to do with the immigration control in this country or whatever, there's a chance that they'll basically detain you at that meeting and then start proceedings to deport you that very day. It's happened many times. I remember I've heard about this for years, right? And they've now said to people that there's a possibility you could be detained and deported to Rwanda, you know, in a few weeks' time. So, of course, they scarper. I actually think that's part of the plan. I think they want them to run away so they can't be found. They disappear into the grey economy, as some people call it, or they just disappear out of this country. So then they're not our problem anymore. Oh, they all end up in Southern Ireland. Well, that's Southern Ireland's problem. Oh, they end up in some EU country. Well, we rejected the EU, so we don't care. Anyway, I'm listening back to last night's Navarra, and they had a clip from, I don't know which news program it was, and I'm sorry, I don't know the person who was actually doing it, but it's a government representative who basically said, yes, the Rwanda policy is working. Why? Because it's telling people that if you do this, you could end up being deported. So now people are scarpering, so we can't find them. And it didn't make me go, oh, isn't it great that I was right? No, it made me absolutely, it nearly made me physically sick. This is actually your plan. You know, a lifetime spent in suffering and poverty and punishment because you were born in the wrong country. You shouldn't be allowed to move, even though rich people can move wherever the fuck they want to, however often they like. They can buy whatever they want to when they're in that land, including homes that stay empty for the entirety of their existence because they're just using it as an asset. Now, you can do that, but everyone else, you know, how often is this a conflict that this country has actually provided weapons for or directly gone into? You know, are you telling me that Iraqi and Afghani people don't have a right to come here after what we did to their fucking countries? Are you kidding me? You know, they have no right, and all the help that they gave people, only for them to completely crumble around their ears and for them to be threatened all the time for helping the British or the Americans. And now if you to go, oh, no, sorry, mate, you can't come. Well, actually, we'll evacuate a load of dogs before we evacuate you from Afghanistan when we finally pull out, like the absolute losers that we are. Fucking nation couldn't win a war if its life depended on it. The cruelty and indecency of this is just beyond comparison. And it's been right there. It's confirmed. So no, but I really just, I don't think anyone really wants it. I know conservatives don't want this. Okay, they want a strong economy. They want their house price to keep continually going up, et cetera, et cetera. They want everyone in this country to work themselves to death so they can be a little more comfortable. I've no doubt about that. But I don't think they're particularly bothered about the refugee thing because it doesn't touch them. It doesn't touch most people's lives. You don't meet these people. You don't come across them. They're just like a strange kind of mythical entity that we're supposed to be afraid of all of the time. It's, you know, even when they go to school.
I think it's the quote, of the, quote of the week, I think, John.
Fuck out of
here. I think the quote of the week there is fantastic. That if if it was dogs escaping, we would be much more sympathetic. That is incredible.
Well, we are a pet-loving country.
That is the quote of the week. That is the quote of the year. Because you're so right. You know, if it was boats and boats of dogs, you're so right. You're incredibly right. It is crazy, but it's true. If it was dogs or cats
invasion.
Or hamsters, hamsters even, or guinea pigs.
Noah's Ark is coming over to Britain. They're going to invade the country.
Bring them all in. We'll pay for everything. We'll pay for hamster food and hamster cages.
Listen, do we have enough lettuce in this country to pay for the refugee rabbits? That's the question you've got to ask yourself.
Did you know that is... it's sad, but it's bloody true. If it was boatloads of guinea pigs, no problem, John.
We'd find the straw from somewhere.
That is the quote of the year. But very good, John. That's okay. Very good. I've never heard it put like that because it's so bloody true. You know.
To be fair, Pete Prothelswaite said something similar in Brastoff, so he got there 20, 30 years before me.
Yeah,
God bless him, RIP.
Yeah, it's incredibly accurate, you know. We've just lost sight. And Middle England, as I said, they need to be reminded your history if you're going to go on and put St. George flags and things like that. Your history that you keep quoting, your ancient history, is come on, you know, it's very sympathetic, it's very socialist. Your history is very socialist. So people have got to remember, certainly from the stupidness that these people are quoting on the current administration, they're twisting it, they're turning it, they're making you hate people. For their own benefit. They've got book deals. They've got Netflix. They don't want to do this. They want to do that. They've got to be all and tell all about Boris Johnson, remember him. They're ready. They've got their thing going, you know. They're set up, you know. We don't stop and question. Actually, my history is very welcoming. My history is very socialist. My history is very NHS. My history is very... social security, not benefits, social security. Our history is that. Our history is sharing our lunches with Albanian workers in the 30s. You know, that's our history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God. You know, and then we got to tell the far left, well, this is what we need to convince people of. If you're 18 and making a case, why don't you quote this stuff to them? Why don't you quote this stuff to them, you know? We could educate people, but maybe it's an age thing, John. Hey, there's nothing wrong with 80s TV, John.
Well, you know, I don't want to be age, as many people, including our good friend David Rosenberg, has pointed out, there's no benefit for a generation war here. And not only is there no benefit to it, it doesn't exist. I just think that, you know, this is desperate times, desperate people, desperate tactics. And as the story you read out early on, if there was one thing that really stood out for me more than anything in that was absolutely bang on point, which is culture war this and culture war that. It's like, well, there's only one survey I know, but what the survey found is mostly young, politically active people who are online too much, who don't even know what a culture war is. Most other people haven't got a clue what it's about. And you're going to base this on, you know, just imagine the joy of that, actually, is that reading a slogan like the woke mob has gone too far, and you think to yourself, or you turn to your loved one of many years and go, what the hell is a woke mob?
John, I was 55 when I asked you the question, what is woke? And we went on air. I didn't ask you offline. Let's pretend you're going to give me an answer. I just came out and asked you because I was only quoting Middle England's history. Middle England's history is very woke. You know, we're just convinced.
Is the NHS woke? Can I ask you that?
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah.
These people creating these divisions, apart from figure a guinea pig, it's for their own ends. It's for their own thing. And they've convinced ethnic minorities to tell you this. They've convinced that braver woman or that awful Pretty Patel. And I'm anti, I don't want any hate. But if you're of Asian origin and you spat on Pretty Patel, I would say to her, what did you expect? What did you expect? You idiot.
Exactly. Well, also, I mean, this is a thing. Again, none of this has happened in a vacuum, right? So this is part of the same project. As I say, it's a project that crosses. It's about disempowering working class people culturally. And most, immigrants tend to be working class, let's be honest, because they come here to work or whatever, if they're allowed to. Refugees would be too if they were allowed to work. They're not allowed to work. They're not allowed to claim benefits. So you can cut all of this crap out about them coming here. Also, that's such a desperate argument too, that people are coming here for the benefits. What fucking benefit? Do you live here? This country is crumbling around your ears. What is beneficial about living in Britain?
John, these benefits that they say that these people are getting, it's disgusting. It's horrible.
Given BMWs, Someone told me that in 2005.
You've got to prove, what I would say to people, John, is, for my kids told me to watch it, is this thing on Netflix called Top Boy. Right, and it's based on Hackney housing. People who live in that social housing.
Three, four series in.
Yeah, and I remember in the 80s, it was bad. I mean, the conditions that people lived in up there was bad, John. And this was the 80s, right, 70s and 80s. This had nothing to do with this media campaign on brown people. And, it was always there, this poverty, and this thing that kids grew up in the 80s, selling illegal substances to make, just to live, and it was horrible then. I must remember, I hardly went down there because you just end up in a tear up. And that was there in the 80s, This is before all this nonsense about immigrants coming here and all this shit. This was always there, And Middle England need to realise you can't park people in this place, park them in this, compartmentalise them, and dump them, living on top of each other and think, well, because they're away, let's not talk about it. I mean, That's what happens, and it had nothing to do with immigration. Jesus Christ, John.
It is. Absolutely. And look, one of the things I was going to say is that there's so much to say on this, actually, but and we're pressed for time. But I think that the very idea of kind of, condemning people for selling drugs, for instance, is something that just increasingly becomes to me, or actually even other types of crime to some degree. Obviously, if you're a victim of it, and I know people, no one wants to be a victim of crime, neither do I. I'm not making a minor issue about this, right? But compared to the kind of stuff we're talking about now, the kind of way you treat people in this country's refugee system, if you can even call it that, some geezer standing on a corner selling drugs. Okay, firstly, and I'm not doing this, I don't condemn people for taking drugs, except cocaine. It's the only drug I genuinely hate. I really don't condemn people, because what else are you going to do to get by, right? And what else are you going to do to feel good sometimes? But, it is a two-way process, right? There's a guy standing around selling it, and there's a guy wanting to buy it. And there's no point in pretending that goes one way, because that's capitalism. I've got something, you want it, I'm going to sell it to you. The idea of that, there's certain things you have restrictions on. Yeah, there are certain things we have restrictions on, but there's actually probably more things we should have restrictions on, like buying and selling a home that you're not going to live in when there's a housing crisis, like being able to buy council housing and then not replenish it because there's too many of that what's left of that being sold off and was sold off in the 80s, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to say anything none of you aren't going to imagine, I would say, so I won't bother going into great detail about that. But the idea of condemning people for being involved in that kind of street economy or black market economy, to tell it to the birds, man, I don't care. It's not that. Not only is it indecent to treat people this way, I think I've said that enough times on this week's show, but it doesn't deal with the issue. Okay, it does not deal with the issue. It's not going to make you any happier because it's not going to make you any safer. It's not going to make you any more secure. Okay, you want to get rid of people who are causing damage and destruction to this country, then you need to get rid of corporations that have no accountability. You need to get rid of those who have more capital than brain cells, you know, who are basically in a much, much stronger position. You need to, and again, you know, bear in mind, Dave, talking about we talked about Middle England, wherever the fuck that is, on this show quite a bit this week. But Middle England is not like anything. It's not homogeneous. It's not a hive mind. Some people are kind of in favour of the kind of policies we saw under Thatcher, but a hell of a lot of people who sometimes were in favour of those or against those policies are now actually quite against them. You hear renationalisation used to be me and five blokes and a dog in a room somewhere listening to some geezer ranting on about the importance of renationalising things because Lenin told us it was the best thing to do. Great swathes of the country, even, you know, formerly UKIP and probably now a few reform voting people are actually in favour of renationalisation because they see that we're getting ripped up. I mean, basically, when you've got shit in your rivers and the water companies are getting bailed out so they can give money to their shareholders, it doesn't go down well with the public. And going, look, there's some refugees over there. Oh, look, there's some people protesting about the mass murder of Palestinians, but that's anti-Semitic. It doesn't work. It's just not going to work. You're just going to keep coming back to the same old well, which is run dry, and there's nothing you can do about it. So, yeah, I mean,
what's interesting, John, with the advent of privatisation, with the rise of privatisation, we saw a rise in drug-related crimes. And then you start coming out with policies for the next election, how we're going to drive crime down. It's bizarre, isn't it, John? Any shout-outs, John, this week?
Any shout-outs? Well, okay, firstly, I had two more stories this evening. I think I over-prepared, but that's okay because it gives me less work to do for next week. So I was going to talk about Home Office attacks on the homeless. We'll talk about that next week. And I was going to do something about the student protests. I'll give you a quick word on the student protests going on in America right now. This is great. I totally support it. Let's see it spread over here and every other part of the world. Free Palestine and shout out. I just want to say one thing about that, which is I've heard some arguments. You and I will be very quick to jump on privilege and those who have privilege and to, you know, give them a good kick in one format or another. But people talking about, oh, these privileged rich students. Yeah, okay, a lot of students going to places like Columbia are rich. But look what they're doing with their privilege. Okay, so please, you have absolutely no, I wouldn't say you have no right, you can think what you want, but you have absolutely no legitimate position to slag folks like this off because they are putting themselves at risk. They're putting themselves at risk from vicious Zionists who come and try and attack them, or some of whom even shout to the girls on these campuses, I hope you get raped by Hamas and things like that, which is a really sick thing to say to anybody. Actually, it's far more likely they get raped by the IDF than they would by Hamas, but there you are. So, you know, that stuff like that, and they're risking expulsion, they're risking attack and brutalization from the police, if not the National Guard. This is the most significant protest America has seen since the 60s, and far more significant than that, because the boomers were a bunch of self-serving little pussies anyway. They were just protesting because they didn't want to get caught up in the draft half the time. But with a few notable exceptions, to be fair. But also, you know, they're facing the notion that someone wants is talking about putting people like this, you know, get the names of these students, put them on a list to make sure they never get any employment when they leave college. They're putting a hell of a lot on the line here. Okay, so please don't fob them off as being privileged. Okay, I'm more privileged than they are right now because I'm just sitting here doing a radio show. So shout out to the students all over America who are fighting back and rising up and demanding a free Palestine and demanding that America ends its this country has complicity in that, but America is basically the only reason Israel exists, the only reason it actually is able to function in any way. So I really, really admire them for doing that. Other than that, shout outs would be to hopefully upcoming interview guests. I won't say who because I don't like to curse these things, but Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I was just going to point out to a few folks that in a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to be away for 2 to 3 weeks. Now, hopefully I'll have some stuff to put on some interviews, maybe. If not, then there'll be a couple of repeats. But I'm sure you won't mind that too much. And Dave's very good at selecting stuff, which sometimes I listen to a playback of just to see which episode you played. And then I just go, when did this one come out? Because everything we're talking about in here sounds strangely relevant. I can usually tell by how shit my microphone is. That's the only way I can remember the year that particular episode was produced in. So I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. God, that mic was terrible. That's other than that, it just sounds like we could have put it out yesterday, which is really sad. And obviously, just a shout out to you, Dave, for doing this show every week. I appreciate it. And for calming things down after I've gone off on one with some good music, keeping it flowing and going. I was just going to say, shout out to the Beyond the Baseline exhibition at the British
Library.
Wow, that
sounded wicked, man. That sounded brilliant. The replays are probably relevant, just as relevant then as they are now, John, because politically we need some change. We can't keep replaying shows that say the same problems as now. So that means we need change, regardless. Many thanks, Johnny, and we'll catch you next week.
You will indeed. Thank you for listening, folks. Happy International Workers Day. And as I said, remember, knuckle down and do the boring crap, because it will get us a better tomorrow.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.